Hello, hello, hello. You are now tuned in to Unorthodox Real. My name is Relicious, and I am the host of this podcast. So today, I'm going to be talking about racial inequity of coronavirus. I did a poll on my Instagram and asked people if they wanted to hear an interview or hear InfoBase, and literally 75% of the people said they want to hear InfoBase. So I'm here with facts, okay? So today, my episode is going to be on racial inequity of coronavirus. It's going to be split into two parts. The first part is going to be me discussing the New York Times article that came out yesterday being July 5th. And then the second half is going to be an article that I wrote for, not an article, but a congressional brief that I wrote for the Ways and Means House Committee that talks about racial inequity of the coronavirus, particularly in the Black community. So, for starters, yesterday, the New York Times put out an article titled "The Fullest Look Yet at the Racial Inequity of Coronavirus." And within the article, they talk about how New York Times actually sued the CDC because the CDC did not want to reveal a clearer and more complete picture of how coronavirus is affecting Black and Latino people across America. So CDC finally released the data, and five authors wrote about it. So first I want to talk about the authors. So after reading it, I was like, it had to be some white people that wrote this. And indeed I was right. Four out of the five authors are white. One of them is an Asian woman. By white, they were all white men. And then there was the Asian woman. And I say this because it's only once that they say the words racism in it, which was kind of, but I was like, all right, we just gonna take what the information they gave us. But I want to highlight that in the article, they state that Latino and African American residents of the United States have been three times as likely to become infected as their white neighbors, according to the new data from the CDC, which provides detailed characteristics of 640,000 infections detected in nearly 1,000 U.S. counties. And Black and Latino people have been nearly twice as likely to die from the virus as white people, as the data shows. So in this article, they do a really good job at trying to tell us through maps and visuals of how Black and Latino people across the United States are being affected by coronavirus. So they interview a nurse, Miss Bradley from Michigan. She's from the metropolitan area of Grand Rapids, and she works in the ER, and she said everybody there was Black. Everyone who was in the ER was Black. And I want to put into context that Black and Latino residents in Kent County make up 20% of the population, but 63% of the people infected with coronavirus in Kent County have been Black and Latino. So there is a huge disparity there. They state public health officials and elected leaders in Michigan said there was no clear reason Black and Latino people in Kent County were even more adversely affected than in other parts of the country. And I said, wait, there's no clear reason? This is where I mean where they only state racism once, but a lot of the reasons that could be shown is due to racism. And they further on go to say in the article, experts point to circumstances that have made Black and Latino people more likely than white people to be exposed to the virus. One being, many of them have frontline jobs that keep them from working at home. They rely on public transportation or lived in cramped apartments or multi-generational homes. Again, all of these circumstances are due to racism. I will further go on in the podcast and talk about some of the reasons why that is. But I want to state the pitfalls of this article. Like, I want to say, yes, the data that they comprised was good, okay, cool. But let's not forget, they only point out systemic racism once. They only use the word racism as a whole once. Which is kind of like, did y'all learn anything from the past month? Did y'all? Like, were y'all really doing the reading? like y'all said y'all were, because how could you only say racism once? But okay. Again, 4 out of the 5 authors were white men. Again, I don't know who is housed at New York Times, but I would have loved to see a black person cover this or write about it. And another thing, they glance over Native American communities and how they've been negatively affected by the virus. I want to put this into context. So, an opinion piece was written by Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times back in May, and the title was "Top U.S. Coronavirus Hotspots Are in Indian Nation," more specifically the Navajo Nation. So the Navajo people have had more people infected with coronavirus per capita than any state in the country. So if Native American tribes were counted as states, the five most infected states in the country would have been Native tribes, with New York dropping down to number 6. And this was data that was comprised by UCLA, and it was compiled by the American Indian Student Center at their school. So they interviewed a Navajo community organizer, Janine Yazzie, and she states the criminal negligence shown by the federal government and the lack of access to testing and PPE and other necessary resources has cost us more lives than we could imagine, and they feel like they don't deserve this negligence, which is completely true. America has glanced over the indigenous community for centuries, and as we can see, even in the recent New York Times article that was written yesterday, they barely talk about how Native Americans have been affected by coronavirus. They only talk about Black and Latino people. Okay, so you heard my spiel on the New York Times article. So now I want to give y'all what I wrote to the Ways and Means Committee in regards to the racial inequity of coronavirus, but more specifically in the Black community. So COVID-19 is killing Black Americans at an unprecedented rate. So no one knows when their day will come in terms of death, but most people living in America in this era do not envision their life being taken away due to a deadly infectious disease. The year 2020 has resulted in over 129,000 deaths from SARS-CoV-2 in the United States, causing coronavirus to be the second leading cause of death. Furthermore, this disease is disproportionately killing Black Americans. While Black people account for just 13% of the U.S. population, they make up 23% of the COVID-related deaths that were known to race. So, race and ethnicity data for coronavirus cases are not readily available at the county level. This is changing as they begin to compile more data. However, the COVID tracking project is working to show this impact. They have combined the latest infection and death rates from counties. This is the New York Times data set with the largest racial or ethnic group in that particular county based on the Census Bureau's 2018 five-year estimates. So among the top 20 counties with the highest level of infections per capita, Black people are not the largest racial and ethnic group. However, in 8 of the 20 counties with the highest number of COVID-related deaths, Black people are the largest racial group. In fact, 4 of the top 5 counties with the highest death rates are predominantly Black. So when I said that Black people are not the highest largest racial group in terms of the highest level of infection per capita, it's actually white people. But like I said, Black people are the largest racial group in terms of deaths. So I'll speak about how COVID is affecting New York City. So the greater New York City area, one of the most populous cities in the United States, was the epicenter for America's COVID-19 outbreak. While just 2.5% of the U.S. population lives in New York City as of June 8th, 2020, this region saw 19% of all U.S. COVID-19 cases and 19% of U.S. deaths. This region has a higher than average proportion of Black and Hispanic residents as compared to the United States, being 24% versus 13% and 29% versus 18% respectively, and these communities have been hit hard by the virus. 25% of the coronavirus hospitalizations in New York City have been Black residents, and Hispanic or Latino residents make up 20% of the New York City hospitalizations. Black people accounted for 28% of the COVID-19 fatalities in New York City, though they make up 24% of the total population. Hispanics account for 34% of New York City COVID-related deaths, but only make up 29% of the population, in comparison to white residents that make up 27% of the fatalities, but account for 32% of the population. So Black and brown people are dying from coronavirus at disproportionate rates when compared to their white neighbors. This is a trend that comes as no shock to anyone in public health. Structural racism, the historical and contemporary policies, practices, and norms that create and maintain white supremacy, exacerbate the social determinants of health that led to the rise of coronavirus deaths in Black and brown communities. Black Americans' inability to prevent coronavirus infection is due to systemic racism and structural determinants of health. Educational attainment, housing availability, and access to healthcare are structurally related to an individual's chance of being infected to the coronavirus. So I'll dive into education. So educational attainment is an indicator of improved health outcomes. Higher education allows people to have secure, high-paying jobs with fewer safety hazards. In terms of COVID-19, essential workers have been faced with safety hazards while attending work. 4% of hospitalizations in New York City has come from workers who commute to work using public transportation, 2% of people who walk, and 3% of people who take their own vehicle. So in terms of food and nutrition, education also influences food and nutrition options, and the development of chronic disease such as hypertension, diabetes, and some cancers arise as a result for poor eating habits. Those with minimal education are more at risk of making poor nutritional choices and are more likely to reside in areas with minimal access to healthy food options and are more at risk for developing chronic disease. So residential segregation. Another driver of these inequities is residential segregation, the physical separation of two or more groups into different neighborhoods, which then also drives disparities within the healthcare system. This long-standing unacceptable historical trend perpetrates today, as it keeps neighborhoods from mixing with people of different races, ethnicities, and income. Residential segregation leads to racial disparities in health. Spatial separation by race physically protects white people from interacting with Black people. Residential segregation can be based on race, income, both race and income, home ownership, and rental property. Historically, residential segregation has been exacerbated due to governmental policies like Jim Crow laws and redlining. Jim Crow laws were local and state policies that legalized racial segregation. Black children did not attend the same schools as white children. This law was abolished in 1968, but the remnants of Jim Crow law can be visible today. Redlining is an illegal discriminatory practice in which mortgage lenders deny loans or an insurance provider restricts services to certain areas of a community due to racial characteristics of the applicant's neighborhood. The term came about due to the use of red marks on the maps of loan corporations would use to outline mixed race or Black neighborhoods. So next, access to healthcare. Black and Hispanic communities are affected the most by residential segregation compared to white people, and it is putting their health at risk. Though the Jim Crow law has been deemed unconstitutional, communities are still faced with repercussions of structural racism. Residential segregation negatively affects the health of residents who call New York City home, whether it is through gentrification, zoning practices, or preferences of housing location. Policies should be equitable to all members of that particular community. An example of this is hospital location and capacity in lower income boroughs in New York City. Plain and simple, they do not have adequate resources to take care of the multitude of COVID-19 patients that walk through the emergency room. The care that these patients receive is of the worst quality, and the hospital may lack a specialist to treat the virus. Poor quality housing is also associated with various negative health outcomes, including chronic disease and injury, and poor mental health. Low-income families are forced to live in unsafe housing due to the limited rental market in big cities. Inadequate housing availability could expose a family to vermin, mold, and water leaks that could lead to serious respiratory illnesses. With coronavirus being a respiratory illness, individuals living in poor quality housing are more susceptible to contracting the virus. So next, my call to action. Black and brown populations face challenges in accessing medical care in America. Black and Hispanic people are less likely to have health insurance coverage from a private employer and are more likely to have public health insurance coverage than white people. Black and Hispanic people are more likely to receive care from the emergency room and lack of continuity in health care. There are systematic racial differences in the quality of care Black people receive. Black people on Medicare are less likely to receive procedures needed to manage chronic disease. The disproportionate rates of coronavirus in marginalized communities are no coincidence. Marginalized populations in the United States have higher rates of chronic diseases such as hypertension, heart disease, and diabetes, more comorbidities, and less likely to have quality medical care. This has a direct impact on people who are infected with coronavirus to fight off the virus. Some living conditions also make Black Americans more at risk to becoming infected with coronavirus, such as living in high density populations and inadequate air filtration. So I wrote to Congress and said, as Congress considers the effects of coronavirus on Black and brown communities in America, while the excessive deaths will never be remediated, governmental policies can lead change for the future. We call you to respond boldly and take action to change oppressive systems that limit housing availability, access to healthcare, and community services. Strong and bold action must happen now to address the social and structural determinants of health. So these are the three strategies that I posed. 1. Invest in equal housing opportunities. To ensure that citizens are receiving equal housing opportunities, real estate professionals must abide by non-discriminatory laws based on race, color, religion, sex, handicap, familial status, or national origin. Equal housing opportunities provide a community with abundance of resources to minimize comorbidities. Families will begin to have access to healthy food options, a safe place to promote physical activity, and adequate education. Mandating the implementation of equal housing opportunities will provide health equity by providing underrepresented communities the adequate infrastructure to lead a healthy life for generations to come. Policymakers need to aggressively take action on brokers and realtors that do not abide by the Fair Housing Act of 1968. Though housing discrimination is illegal, it still happens. This discrimination is claiming the lives of Black and brown people due to coronavirus. If marginalized groups received the same opportunity to equal housing as their white counterparts, they would have the ability to receive quality care in their neighborhood. Next, invest in healthcare. Black people are not receiving the same quality healthcare that their white counterparts receive. Even when insurance status, income, age, and severity of disease are comparable, only 3.3% of the United States physicians are Black, even though Black people make up 13.3% of U.S. residents. Physicians should represent the demographics they serve. To mitigate the effects of implicit bias, Black doctors need to be more visible in hospitals that serve vulnerable populations. These hospitals need to be equipped with resources that will allow a patient to receive the best quality care from physicians. Invest in the community. Ensure high-quality, cost-accessible primary, secondary, and tertiary education to ensure an equitable society. Introducing students in primary and secondary education to diverse career opportunities earlier in their academic career will allow students, especially Black and Brown students, to see themselves in a particular profession. Increased funding is needed in education to ensure that all students' needs are met, whether it be through nutrition programs, extracurricular activities, or better student-teacher-parent engagement. Minority communities need their needs met. Building a community based on justice and equity will allow for Black and Brown families to lead a better life for generations to come. So coronavirus has dismantled our daily living. It is not every day that we can use a deadly virus as a tool to create change. This is a time for policymakers to reevaluate the structures that have led to deaths in their community, to ensure that their residents have access to quality housing, education, and health care regardless of their zip code. So yes, I want everyone to take what I said in, and I pose that I'm not sure when the coronavirus is going to end. We don't know at this point. All we know is that the racial inequities are there. More Black people and Brown people are dying from the virus, and something needs to be done about it. There needs to be more increased testing throughout the United States, but more specifically in Black and Brown communities. And I encourage everyone to stay safe. Don't coerce your friends to go places with you because this virus is real. Not everybody wants to put themselves out there. Please remember to wear a mask, wash your hands, just be safe. As much as you can, don't try to shame people who are not being what looks like safe. That could be a teaching moment for them. So you could either A, tell them, hey, maybe you should wear a mask, or provide them with a mask. Encourage your friends to hang out with you in small gatherings. You don't have to go out and do all that, do what y'all used to do back in the day, because life will never go back to what it used to be. I want y'all to understand that now. This virus, who knows when it's going to end, but life will never go back to the old normal. We have to create a new normal, because now we are, from the civil unrest to coronavirus, life will never be the same, and we have to be okay with that and create changes that we want to see once this is all over. We want to live a better life once the COVID-19 is over, okay? We can't go back to our old ways. We have to create new ways, okay? Make sure y'all register to vote. Make sure y'all do vote. Make sure y'all wash your hands. Wear a mask. Encourage others to wear a mask. If you see somebody not wearing a mask and you got an extra mask, give them a mask. If you got some hand sanitizer and you see somebody doing all that stuff, being dirty, putting their hands on their face, touching their mouth, give them some hand sanitizer. Let's lead by example, okay? So yes, thank y'all for listening. This is under 30 minutes like I wanted it to be. Make sure y'all follow me on Instagram and Twitter. And yeah, thank you for listening. make sure y'all stay safe for real. I think my ending spiel was too long, but y'all get it. All right, bye.